Thinking about doing some concentration stuff with impact stuff, but it's going to take longer than so. But we're just going to leave that out for the AG presentation. But I will be
morning
getting a nice plot together of all the KVEX stuff, all the lights. I've processed the 3rd, 31st, the 30th, the 29th, the 6th.
Oh, I haven't seen any of that. Except for the 3rd.
Yeah. I'm going to make a box of whiskers and plot of the relative chain aggregate concentration.
So are all those in your directory and on aircraft?
It's all on the individual flights in the analysis folder.
Individual flights and analysis.
So the analysis folder for each individual flight. Through all the files are you'll see like if you go into the analysis, it'll be like it'll show another called cut legs. Go into there, and then there's a science bio director. A science bio director.
I'm gonna get my feedback on the ground here this week and look around.
Yeah.
Is to see what some of the other flights look like.
This box plot is probably going to tell the best story. I'm going to do a 5 kilometer distance from coil. I'm going to average 5 kilometers for each flight. So you're going to have a bunch of box plots. Show where the 50% pile area is. And see what it looks like.
Okay. Let's start talking about impacts. I was going to get back to the uncertainty analysis, but I've been meaning to talk about the impacts configuration and have you look at the document so that we're all on the same page for impacts. And I was starting looking at it and started modifying it. And did I get the, I got some of this modified, but I forgot when I copy and paste. So maybe you guys can ask questions and we can go over this a little bit. I will tell you the history and what this is. So we have for every field project and for every airplane, a document that communicates how the instruments are set up. And the primary reason for this document is for the software and hardware people to communicate and know that they're the same, because a lot of times people set up software and they need to know how it's configured and they don't necessarily do the hardware. So I'm going to change this to 2023. And so it's on my website if anybody wants to pull it down, but I'm going to change it so we'll upload a new version and make it available. But it's to summarize all the instruments, what they're doing in. And also I noticed the first request, Jen, you can hear me, right?
Yep.
So we got a few, when you're putting probes on, we got a few serial numbers missing. So it's always good to have the serial number of the instrument so we can always rate the instrument to the calibration. And also the fact that we may change the probe. So we have a spare crowd droplet probe that's coming back from the, from DMT to be calibrated Langley this week. So if we ever put that on, we should be know the serial number. And so we can keep track of the calibrations for that probe. So, and they're usually hidden and marked on the probe itself. So for example, now we have the two rice probes. So it'd be nice to grab the serial numbers off of there. And that way there's no ambiguity between, because the model numbers and everything is exactly the same. We got the owners are a little bit different here, but that can be maybe a little bit confusing. So can you try to grab that?
Yeah, I'll do that.
So particularly for the rice, I don't know, these ones are probably hidden for the static and pressure transducers. But we should be able to grab the 3000 too. And that's owned by NASA, I'm pretty sure. NASA usually buys the instruments. Oh, I never did get an update this week if the CAPS probe is actually even approved to fly. So I guess not. So I guess that's totally out for this year. Although our probe, so I don't know what this is. So let me go through the list of instruments of the NASA P3 research aircraft. We got the tail number, so that identifies the aircraft. Acronyms are defined. And I don't know anybody that we need. Oregon State. And we don't have any natural suborbital people either. We do have the Army. And I could put in, they're the ones we're borrowing the CAPS probe from. And I could add in the actual branch. And the contact, and I guess we'll use the CAPS as a spare, but it's not going to be there. We talked about two-dimensional probe. I guess that's the serial number. Well, no, that's not the serial number. No, this is serial number 0112. I know that. I don't know, the other ones have an H before it down here for the spec probes. Wonder where that comes from.
Is it HTTPS?
Maybe. Maybe you can check that, Jen, if there's actually an H on the
actual. Yeah, I can check those.
Yeah. But this one's 12, that one's 5. That's the CDP. I don't know if there's anything identifying a Hawkeye, and I don't know what a model, version one or what.
Pre-serial number?
I think this is a serial number probe, but I don't know that there's too many of them, but it's a...
ES-1 flies on his...
Yeah.
So there's at least two.
There's at least two. There's not too many of the Hawkeyes, but there are a couple. So there should be some type of serial number.
There was one in the instrument badge that was aiming for the A-10.
Yeah. I looked for that one. Oh, did they ever make it?
I think
they did. Okay. They were making one for that, huh? Well, you know, if anybody wants to have one for sale relatively cheaply, I think we could get maybe 10% the cost of a new one, 10% on the dollar. 1% for a university is a somehow I don't think Speck would go for that. Okay, so Hawkeye, and then we got the HVPS A and B, and the A one is the serial number 04, right? And the B one is the 16. Why is that backwards? We didn't have them.
So I think, so we're going off of A and B as the vertical and the horizontal. So the horizontal one is 04 and then the vertical is 16.
Horizontal. So, because I thought A was the outside of the wing and the B was the inside.
I think that depends on, yeah. So the one on the outside is 04. And that one's a horizontal.
Yeah. And that should be A.
Yeah, so you're going to need a change in, this is the HVPS vertical in the second column. Change that to horizontal.
Okay. So let me double check this because that, I can.
That works with their, which one we, so when you go onto the plane, pushing in the breakers, we have 04 as 1 and then 16 as 2.
Yeah, 1 and 2 instead of A and B, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
whatever. I'm trying to look at the, where is the talk from this summer? This is, should be here. So this is the vertical A, right? So I got it in this one, right? A is this way and B. So this is horizontal, right?
Yep.
So A is horizontal and B is vertical. Okay. So
can I ask you a question real quickly?
Yeah.
What is the original orientation of the HVPS? Isn't it in the vertical? That's what you typically see.
Yeah.
And there's only
typically
one.
You fly it. Horizontal, yeah. A. Right. Is that right? Andy, the horizontal orientation is usually the more preferred.
People have argued about that since they invented OAB probes.
Yeah, so.
If you are looking down on it, you don't see any effect of the fall velocity of the probe, of the particle while it's in the sample line. And if you do it horizontally, you get a slightly elongated diagonally elongated image because it's falling while it's going through the array.
Slightly falling.
It was also, I think, in the original probes, some thought that you'd get a better dimension of a snowflake with down on it than if you look side against it. It is intended to be oriented horizontally.
Yeah. Well, irrespective, yeah. So everybody goes, I think the UN D standard has been horizontal as because that's like, if you look at the CDP, you know, that's kind of funny because it's vertical, you know, it's usually horizontal for the CDP. So, and I don't have any of the other ones, but to me, I guess, you know, the more standard, well, like you said, everybody argues there's no standard to it. No standard. I guess my personal standard is more horizontal than vertical. So.
But if you got both ways on the P3, you're all set.
Yeah.
Everybody,
yeah. So anyway, so A will be horizontal. and V and B, oops, is vertical. Okay, and A is 04 and B is 016. And they actually do go in order. So there were 12 probes, I guess, made between 4 and 11, between the two HVPSs that we have. And I always try to get these a little bit I get messed up on my, okay, see now I have enough space in there. Okay, so we have all the acronyms. I get tired of my, okay, so we got down to Hawkeye HVPS is all right. King probe, they call it King probe, I don't know. King hot wire probe, liquid water content. Oh, none of the other ones have what it's measuring. I'll get rid of that. Manufacturer, I guess. It's so old that there's no one around anymore. Did they take over for them? I mean, I don't
out there, how I
okay. Yeah, they got their own version of it, so I guess we'll put that. I'm not sure. We got abbreviations for spec. Should we just put abbreviations for all these? Define them in here. Include. We all like to be like NASA, so we don't know what their flights are because they abbreviate. And I did that wrong. Edit. Format. What? I cannot remember the shortcut for DMT and maybe someone could add other people. Oh, we got DNT and then we got SEA, Science Engineering Associates. Copy. Define your acronyms. Call that SEA. And oh, what's spec? Yeah, Strat Park. Is that where they were first located, Andy? Or where does that name come from?
I don't know the background. I think originally Paul was part of something else. They didn't split up.
So. So now we can abbreviate things. Look at that. Now we can get that on one line. If our HVPSs have too long of abbreviations to fit on there. Okay, so King Probe, SEA, Collins Aerospace for the Rice probes. These are on commercial aircraft for Collins that used to be DMT, Goodrich, and way back Rosemont. Same group of people. They keep getting bought out. We never talked about it, but in the hot wire boom, we have a static and pressure transducers. We could calibrate them and actually get a backup if we lose the true airspeed from the data system, which would have been good when we had processing for if we don't get the aircraft data, we should maybe try to get that calibrated on flights. That's in
the idea to get the airspeed at the position of the pylon itself.
And that would be another thing. You know, here's the boom, the hot wire boom with the pitot tube on it. So there's the dynamic heating that comes in right at the tip, and then there's a static ring around it for the static pressure. And we could see and check to see if the airspeed here is different than what we get from the aircraft. And if someone wants to, we got all the calibration procedures. So when Lee and they do their calibration flight for their aircraft wins, we could calibrate our hot wire boom for that. So if someone's online or anybody wants to, really interested in wins, I have the equations and software to do that. And we could come up with our calibration coefficients. It involves, you got to pick out time periods for when you want the winds to match and stuff. And we got simplified equations because we don't have a 5-port pressure measurement like they do to get slide strip and attack and beta angles get converted to slide slip and alpha attack angles. But we could do a pretty good approximation for the level flights with just the pitot tubes.
Just NASA calibrate their main aircraft?
Yeah, so actually it's the NASA Langley Group. Lee Thorhill. So I should know him because he's going to come out and we're going to do a calibration flight after we're going to instrument check flight and then a long 6-hour calibration flight for the winds. And then we'll check out and do a calibration flight for the crowd probes.
I think the main difficulty is you can't get a good static pressure.
Yep.
Anywhere on a finite size airplane.
Yep.
Where your static pressure point is, depending on where it is, you could get a variable static pressure.
Yes. And I went through that calculation once, Andy, on a citation, because I went through all the errors, and you're right. It's really the static pressure. Having a static pressure measurement is what contributes the most to the error in the winds. And usually what they do is they put ones on each side of the aircraft. They try and compensate. That's what we had on the citation. So that... But that would be the other thing too, is you model that. A lot of times the aircraft manufacturers model where you have a place on the aircraft where there's not a dynamic impact on your flights. So that's a consideration for a new airplane, and get a good one. And I'm not sure on this one if they're tying into the aircraft one on a citation. We had our own static port braces. Could ask Lee if they're tying into the aircraft static. Sometimes they don't like you to do that. But static pressure is not easy to measure.
Well, I go through a lot of adding in some aircraft, you tow a kind of a tight sort of thing where you're going to get static pressure that's not influenced by the aircraft itself.
Yep.
Quite a process.
Yeah, I heard about them, but I have never seen anybody do it. They pull it behind the aircraft. They read it out, so it goes behind the aircraft, right? And then they get a a static pressure measurement back there. And then what did they do? They assume that that static pressure is the real one, and then they adjust and they kind of calibrate what's on the airplane to have an adjustment factor.
Yeah, I've never done it, so I can't really. I've seen visually, I've seen them do it, physically do it, but I didn't do it in the past.
Yeah, so I haven't seen them even do that, but we'll see. But we do have faster and better transducers now, but that's not where the error comes from. It actually comes from, like Andy's saying, is the location on the aircraft. And the other thing is we've been trying to measure what the pitot actually true airspeed is here. And we've done that with, if you see the CAPS probe that's not shown here, it has its own pitot pressure on it. However, that pitot tube is not really long enough to get a good measurement. So they do all the work and put it in there, and then it's not quite good enough to help to improve that. Ours should be pretty good up here. And we're doing fluid modeling type of stuff too, to model the fluid dynamic flow along the aircraft. Anyway, so I got to the first table. Let me save this in case I get messed up. Make this, put the dates on. And since I already got a third, I'm going to make this the fourth. Jump ahead one day. So the first thing we have on there is analog to digital board. And that's where, Jen, if you want to know, this is where we hook up them lines from the hot wire boom on 4 and 5 and make sure they don't get them fripped. Although you can kind of tell pretty easily that the static pressure should have some voltage on it, where the dynamic should be near zero because the aircraft is not moving. Likewise, the king and the signal on there, don't get them messed up or get them backwards. The voltages should be positive. There's a plus and minus to measure the differential voltage. If you get negative ones, should flip them around so they're positive.
Didn't that happen last year?
Probably.
Yeah, that happened last year.
So then we can flip it around in our processing too, but we should check them out. That's a good check when they get the hot wire on, just to look at what the voltages are. And yeah, we have a 24 analog to digital board where we're measuring 4 voltage measurements, which tells us that we have really moved on from voltage measurements. Lots of noise can be on them. Serial board is next, and maybe I got some questions for this for you, Jen, because we actually have 2 in the M300, don't we?
So we have, I think, serial 2 through 9 and then 10 through 17.
So is a serial board 1 and serial board 2. And because we have 2 of them, we are thinking of putting a 3rd one on, but we just figured out that we didn't need to have 3. But which one is the one that has the 422s?
It should be 10 through 17 that has, I think,
10 6. Through 17, yeah. So I got to change these to, okay, this should be 10. I don't know why there's so many spaces in there. This is 11, but it's not all of them. It's 10, because we should have, um, I'm trying to think of why these are labeled. Yeah. There's so, eight of them on the one. This one, the first serial one is internal. I don't know how to measure that. Because these ones are the eight that are on this. So it's an eight port serial board, right?
Yeah.
So we got one, and this one is numbers. I'll put this zero. I don't know. But that's internal. That's not one of, so that's the other thing. This is serial board one, but this is not on serial board one. Because that's internal to the, well, that's on the back of M300. Do another one, he says.
I'll just say external.
External. Serial board. So I can say EXT here. And then I put EXT here.
Do you want to, is the software key? Is that still?
Yeah, it's internal. That's what I mean by.
It's internal, but it's external.
Well, it's, I don't know. It really isn't internal. It's on the back of the M300, right? Got to make sure that's installed. Well, so it won't work.
It is.
So I just say external number one, and then these numbers refer to which ones of the number one it is. I don't know, 1-1. I don't know. I won't put it down there. But then, what we want to do is I wanted to, I guess. We are going to put is this right? The CDP and the RISO on 7 and 8?
Yeah, so CDP should be on SIR 8 and then RISO is on SIR 9. So
oh, these are there. Flipped around?
No, I think you're good.
Okay. You think I'm good there?
And then, yeah, on the bottom one here, you're just changing it to the other serial board.
Yeah, so, but we got...
the serial board 2 is internal?
No. Well, it's a card.
That's also on the back of the M300?
Yeah. It's a card in the M300. What's that card? That's a B... MB card or B Bluetooth or Boo something.
It's called a Blue Storm board.
Blue Storm?
Yeah, that's the name of the Blue the card. Storm.
So it's a Blue Storm's card inside the M300. If you really care. And then there's actually a serial number on them and stuff too, and a configuration of them cards, but
they're both inside
them. Yep. And we got a third one that I sent out there with Jen that we were thinking of putting on. Because at one time we had more than 16 serial imports. I kid you not. So that's 10.
So 17 is the last one. So I think you need this a 9.
Be 9.
Yeah.
Right. So this is. Yeah. So this would be. This is serial 10. 11, right? 12. And then, of course, I don't have quite enough room on my... So, but really, these should be labeled in 1, 2, 3, 4. And I guess you go back if we're going to label them by the numbers. Sorry. Oh, but there's only 8 of them here. All right, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. And then this one's not there.
Delete. I'll change that 9 to an 8.
Oh, yeah. And then these are, the first two are, you said are 232s, right?
Yeah, the first two are 232s.
And the rest are. And these other ones are 422s.
Yep.
So you can configure them inside the board with jumpers. And I had Jen change them, and then she took the board off and said, oh, they're already set to that. So, what?
So you have WCM on source 16 and 17, I think.
Yeah, so this is going to be 422. I don't know if that's so. Here we got WCM, right?
Yeah, so they're both WCM. One of them is the one wire test. I think it's the 16 that's the one wire, but I can check and make sure.
One wire. I guess they do one wire. And the other one is the. Is data, right? I guess we call it.
Yeah.
And you should figure out the configuration of them. I don't remember them offhand. So you can update this. And then we're going to put the rice B on the other one over here, right? Is that?
Yeah, so we're going to put it on 15.
Yeah, we're going to put that on here. And then that should be the same configuration like this. I know that much. And then I have installed on here to just see if they're installed for the project. It's kind of not. Maybe we could put the date that's installed or something. I don't know. Maybe it's not necessary because it's hard to keep up when things are installed or not and stuff. But, and then we have, well, we're missing something else too. There's a NASA out, but there's a NASA in. Where's our NASA in? Oh, wait. No, there isn't because that's on... That's on a network. That's not on the RS-232. Because we're getting them both through the network now. The NASA in and NASA out of the data streams. Before we used to get them through a serial interface. So, anybody see... anything wrong? And I guess I will just put installed for all these, assuming that they will be installed at some point.
They're currently installed right now.
Yeah, so So kind of redundant to have that. So yeah, if you could look at the tables, I can look at the tables to update the configuration. And then of course this one's not there. And then so we don't have the caps card in there now either, right?
No, that's in the lab.
That's in the lab. So I guess we're not going to install that. That's installed. And that one. And this is serial 10 to 17. Right, so that's the... the interface for that. So any questions? These are the data system cards. So these are what's in the back of the data system. And I guess the tag numbers are not applicable there. But we should get the serial numbers of both these cards if you ever have them. But we don't have them out or anything now, so it's hard to grab them. Here's the IP addresses of the computers we should put on. And we have to add one computer. And boy, these are not going in an order. I wonder what the order of these are. So we have reserved 10.15.1.225 through 10.15.1.234. So these are for us UND's use, or I guess UND. So these are network ones. And I'm not sure why we have this order. And we stuck the FIPS on here for whatever reason. I suppose you want me to put them in order for the IP addresses. If we start with 225, which would be the M3, the 2DS would be 226. Because we need to know and how to ping the different instruments and stuff. So, okay, now they're in order. And this one is not there. And we're calling, we got the HVPS 3A computer, and then we got the spec computer, right? And the spec computer is going to be the old HVPS 3A. Is that how we're calling it? I guess I'll make a decision. Whatever. So this is the old one, the big one in there. And this would be 230. And then we have the FIPS data, and then we have the two time servers. So this is the other thing, if you could, and the insert people are there, you could ping the time servers and see if you can run the time service scripts, if they get their network and everything up and running. on there. So we should be able to ping these if we get our data cables to, and that's how we get the time sync. For all the computers have to time sync with them computers at the beginning. And that's why our times are off by up to a second or something. And we should add in there what there's a website address too, right? The NCIRC website. Do you remember what that is?
If you have the iPad, I think it was on there.
Yeah. You
could also ask, probably NCIRC.
Yeah, I think it was 10.15.1.10. We should double check that. I think that's what I remember it being. And then I asked NCIRC if they're going to have available the Stratus receiver, and they said maybe, if they can hook up the antenna for the other iPad. All right. All the configurations. Okay, and he's leaving. So that's the network configurations. Any questions? Networks. So the four numbers are subnets of each other. So that's why everything is 10.15.1, because it's on the same subnet. And that's the network on the aircraft. And I think they have two subnets on the aircraft, 10.15.1 and 10.15.0. That's why there's another time server. So that's how you communicate. You can only have one address for every computer. And I'm not sure. I guess I got. I don't know. I just run these together. Sometimes you try to do this. So okay, rack. Ooh. Oh, I don't want to monkey with the rack.
I updated that over the summer, so it should be.
Yeah, it should be good. Accurate. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, what's the command? You got a lot of space in this. There's a command on these to format the table. Minimize the I will never find it. Anyway, there's a auto thing on the table to minimize table properties. So you don't have the borders in the table to take up all the space. Equipment summary. Okay, we got flash drives to download our data. Are we going to have any data? Which computer has the? We should get the data from the. The UPS is at some point, but we used USB sticks to download the data after the flights. And that should not have changed. The breakers. So these are the breakers on the airplane. So we should update these if they change. So we know what breakers go with what. To be able to turn on the instruments. And double check these for like the heaters and stuff. We can check these breakers and turn them heaters off and work with our temperature probe to see about that. And we should get the in-flight downlink working better this year and make some quick looks. I don't know why these Nazarov ones were there. They're left over. Just delete them. And there's a bunch of other stuff that I think is in the data stream that we don't use. And this should be serial number 012. And I don't know these probe numbers. See, the serial numbers on the probes are different than the serial numbers on the can. And then A is the 004. I don't think we changed this. So I don't know if it was wrong before or.
So you need to then switch the can serial numbers because 15 goes with 4 and 6 goes with 16.
Okay, so this should be 006 and this should be 15.
And those are on station number 11.
Yeah. This is station 11 that NASA calls it. This is station 11. That's on 18. All right, so we got all the canisters. We got the FIPS. So them are all the PMS canisters. And caps would go into 16. Or go where the FIPS was if we didn't have the FIPS. Okay, so that's all that. So we're all done. Any questions? Any questions about any of the documentation that's not right? So I'll upload this, Jen, if you can add the serial numbers and stuff. So, and the breaker numbers to make sure the breakers are correct for the heaters. Aren't these the ones that are in the side box or because these breakers are up front?
Yeah, those are the ones that are up front. I can add the other ones.
Yeah, you should be able to add these ones. And the other questions. So, anyway, any other updates out there?
The hot wire is on. I have Mike right now checking the power with Chris. And we tested the 2DS today. It looks good. All the
power on the 2DS.
Yep.
Okay. Then we got to get check data.
Yeah, I'm just waiting. What
do you need to do to check the data?
So I am waiting to plug everything into the breakers on the plane for the racks. And I just got the my monitor installed today. We fixed it, so.
Oh yeah, you had the screw thing with the monitor. Good job fixing that. So you got the cables, you just have to hook it into the.
Yeah, so that's almost ready. Right? Yeah.
So that's.
I
keep interrupting. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think we're planning on doing that today or tomorrow morning.
Well, great. It's good to see if we get data coming across from the 2DS and maybe the HVPS. I didn't get any email back from Spec about the canister being repaired. And the other thing I told Michael is we got to find the Oh, Christian's here. The fiber optic cables for the Hawkeye.
Yeah, so they're on the plane. I talked to Chris about that today.
So we need to rent them up and also hook them up so that you can turn on the Hawkeye.
I have a question about that for you. Are there supposed to be people coming to do that, or is it, because from what Chris said last year, we had somebody come here and they kind of did everything.
Yeah, so Spec's not coming out this year.
Okay.
So we'll just turn it on. Christian's the expert here.
You just gotta make sure the right fiber optics get plugged in the right areas in the back of the Hawkeye computer.
So Christian says make sure to write.
It should be labeled A, B, C, and D.
Yep. There's A, B, C, and D for the fiber optics get plugged into the right place. And then they used to have an old broken set of fiber optics too, right? Did they take them out?
So they're still in, but they're labeled as don't use these.
Yeah. So you just got to make sure the right ones, the A goes with A and so on, right, Christian? Yep. So you should be able to just hook them up.
You can double check if you have the cable at the wing unplugged from the probe. And if you go inside the plane and you flash a light through the fiber optic, you can see which one is which.
Yep.
To plug them in the correct spot.
Yeah, Chris said something about that, but he said he didn't have a laser for it, or like something that he could use to do that.
You just use a flashlight.
Yeah, just tell him to use a flashlight if he needs to know which ones are which.
Yeah, we can do that. I think he was going to wait a little bit until our seats were installed to actually roll out the fiber optic cables, because he doesn't want somebody to step on them by accident.
Oh, until the seats are installed?
Yeah, because our seats are still just kind of sitting there. They're not installed yet.
Oh. Huh.
Okay,
well, yeah, I'm just, yeah, well, if they can install the seats and stuff, we should test that, because, but as you said, there's enough other stuff to do, but we should, I would think that it'd be easy to install the seats, but.
I can talk to Monica about when they're going to do that.
Yeah. Because anything, you know, because Spec's not coming out, so I like to test that out if we got to get them on the phone or have any issues with that. You know, if it becomes an issue, we can have someone come out there, but we should see if it's working, because it's another thing to check off before we can, you know, because we got to get data and power from all the instruments, so.
Okay.
One more instrument to check, but whatever is the easiest to do first, it's, but I think, you know, 2DS, HVPS, and then the Hawkeye, would be the next one in my mind. And stuff. Okay. Did I use up the whole class period? Just about. Any other questions online? I thought, did Peter or someone else have a question before?
Yes, I had a question from the last class.
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
All right. Yeah. So last class we learned about reducing uncertainty by averaging out.
Yep. Right?
So if we have two probes, for example, first one is measuring at like 1 hertz and second one is measuring at like 10 hertz, and if we average out 10 hertz data to 1 hertz, then which probe will have lesser uncertainty? The one who is originally measuring 10 hertz and then will have,
yeah. Well, there's two things about that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we didn't talk about on on Tuesday is a concept called the time response. So time response is how fast the instrument responds or the sensor responds to a change in the input. So for example, the temperature probes have a time response between 1 and 2 seconds. So you can sample it at 25 hertz, but you're really over sampling that because it's not going to respond to an input. So you're, the noise, it depends on, I guess you're assuming that the noise I talked about was from a analog measurement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we're talking about voltage. Different than digital measurements.
Okay.
So the analog measurements, when we sample something like on the A to D board, you know, like we had talked about today, as long as you should get a better measurement by averaging the 25 hertz data than if you just measured 1 hertz, because that 1 hertz measurement is you make a measurement at that point in time and you digitize it, right? So depending on where you are, you could have a lot more noise. Think of a sine wave or something that's oscillating up and down. There's also what's called an area sin, because you can measure the same point in a sine wave and be off. So if you're measuring voltages, it would be to average the 25 hertz data instead of measure it just every second, with the idea that, you know, maybe the probes don't respond that fast. The pressure transducers do. We can have time responses of very quick, so that the 25 hertz measurements has meaning. But for something like temperature that has a slower time response, it really doesn't have a meaning, because you're not really seeing a change that's real over that time, even if you sample faster. Does that help?
Yes, it does, yeah.
And digital data is usually an average. If you get a value coming out of the digital data, it's usually an average from the previous interval. You know, it's usually not an instantaneous value. And the other thing is the timestamps that we use on our systems, and most of the time, is the end time of the measurement, or the time we record it with the data acquisition system. So it's that time is the end of the measurement, not the middle of it.
Okay.
So, you know, if you have a 1 hertz data and you're looking at that data file, or you're looking at a measurement from that, it's usually that timestamp is usually the end of the measurement period. So that value would actually be from the previous second or something.
Yeah,
but so that's not universal.
True. So from your explanation, it seems like it doesn't make sense to sample very high frequency data for variables that are slowly responds, like yes. For example, temperature. It doesn't make sense to sample at 25 hertz, you know?
Doesn't make sense to,
How about liquid water content? I have seen CDP measurements at 10 hertz, so.
Okay. You know, we sample at 10 hertz and then we usually average to it so that you can try to see them, because there you do have very fast response times because you're measuring every particle, and you just have to worry about having enough particles in your bins when you bin the data. So that becomes the other problem, is that there's a trade-off between how long you sample and the number of particles in the bins. And so you really, I'll show you, I hope to give you guys a paper that we just are getting published about how we went and looked at the, and other people do this too. They look at the number of particles in the bin and use Poisson counting statistics. So if you're counting 100 particles, you take the square root of 100, you get 10. So your uncertainty is 100 plus or minus 10 or 10%. If I did that right. So, you know, if you're only counting 100 particles, you got a pretty high error. Where if you count 1,000, you got a lot less error in that bin. So you got to be careful. And this is why, like the 2DS, when you got the first couple channels, the sample volume is so small that you only got a couple counts in there. So if you add one or two more particles, you really change that concentrations. So that's why it's not reliable, because you don't got enough particles. So if you sample fast, you got to have enough particles that you're sampling.
And do we get like overload issues with like CDPs, like we get from optical array probes? If we have a lot of particles in our sample volume, then do we get kind of overload or no?
Yes, you can. It's called the coincidence. You can get coincidence of multiple particles coming through the beam. And that is accounted for because you can look at the time of the pulse. And there's a rejection time. If the pulse is too long, you can reject them particles. But then you're changing the concentrations because you have two particles and you're getting rid of them and you don't know what to do, and so that changes your concentration. So you can look at the number of rejected particles and see that that's zero or near zero. So typically, unless you get very high concentrations, which you could, you won't have multiple particles in the beam. That's why it's designed to be that size. Okay. But I don't know if that was your question.
Yeah, that was kind of what I wanted to ask. Yeah, it does answer. Yeah.
The other thing we have, and we should try this year, Jen, are you still there? Did we change our CDP to sample and obtain the particle or particle data?
I don't recall, but we might have.
I think we did. So on the crowd dropper probes, there's what they call CDP1 and CDP2. And the difference is that on CDP2, they get the arrival times for the particles for the first 255 or 256 particles in a bin. So you don't necessarily get all the particles depending on your concentrations for the inner arrival times. But at 10 hertz and our concentrations, we are probably getting all the inner the particle in arrival time. So then you could do something like, shattering corrections and stuff like we do for the 2DS. And that's one of the differences for the Hawkeye. They're supposed to be able to sample fast enough to get that data. And the problem is I've never been able to push the CDP past 10 hertz. Although DMT says you can. So it's because of this baud rate here. The cards could do twice the baud rate of 400,680 bits per second. The cards can do that. The CDP says it can do that, but when I try to sample like that, I get no data. So I don't know if it's something with the wiring. I have never gotten into why that is, besides knowing it's possible, but it doesn't work. If I could push it to 460, then we could sample at 25 hertz. And if you sample at 25 hertz, no matter what the concentration, well, I shouldn't say that. Normal crowds then would give you all the particle data. And that's basically what they do in a on the Hawkeye is they sample it very fast and they get all the particle by particle data.
All right. Thanks so much.
So that's another thing we could play around with and try sometime. Increase that baud rate. The problem is it's hard to do on something like the aircraft now because you change that baud rate with jumpers that are in the box that's in the hot wire boom, and we don't have access to it, so we're kind of stuck. But we can change to make sure we record the particle data, although I don't do anything with it, so why record it? But I was thinking that we could write the software to process that and see how the processing of that compares with the data. And then you could do something like look at in arrival times and stuff too to see if they're shattering.
Yep.
But, okay. Read over my I took the whole class period to talk about the configuration. Look over the uncertainty document and the presentation. I'll go over that on Tuesday. And then I got an assignment that you guys can do some math if you want to calculate uncertainties or propagation of uncertainties. Of calculated parameters that are calculated from multiple variables that have uncertainty. So, okay. Other questions? Well, did I stop sharing? We got fine. Oh, there I'm at. Okay, I stopped sharing. Any other questions? Nope. Okay. You can send me feedback. No other questions in the chat. So we'll talk on Tuesday and look over the stuff. And I'm going to probably keep trying to put some assignments and other stuff together, and then I'll upload this for you, Jen, and you can try to modify it with the serial numbers and everything else, and then we'll have it to share so that we all understand what's going on the probes for this. Okay, I will stop. Did I stop sharing? I did stop. Okay, I'll let you guys go. See you later. Bye-bye.